what a lot of us think of, and that's caution.
Talk shame.
Recorded live.
There is that sound. I told you it would come up in a few seconds. Thank you, sir. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Our topic tonight is death and marriage. Death and marriage. And again, my goal tonight is to change your thoughts on death. And so in doing that, I have to ask this question. Do you know how death was created?
I didn't get that.
You didn't get that question?
No.
Do you know how death was created?
Yeah, with the fall of Adam.
With the fall of Adam. But, you know, and that is correct. Because people don't realize, I don't know if a lot of people interpret the Bible differently, but I got to bring it up early. A lot of people blame Eve for giving the forbidden fruit to Adam. And because Adam ate the fruit, he betrayed God. But the truth is Adam was born first, and Eve was created to be a counterpart. Adam was born with internal life. There was no death. There was no death. And he had a direct conversation with God, and God said, "Do not eat from the good and evil tree. You're forbidden from eating from this tree." Well, Eve, she got that story, but she got it a different way, and she interpreted it a different way. Now, if Adam would have just communicated, and we talked about communication on this thing every single call, we talk about communication. If Adam would just have communicated the direct words from God that says, "We can eat from anywhere else, but don't touch that tree," all people would have internal life right now. But because he didn't, God said that one, he was going to make Eve have pains when she has labor and birth a child. And he told Adam that, I created you by dirt, and you will be removed from here by dirt. And with that being said, we have death. We have death. So we are born into sin, and we leave here. Some folks into sin, and some folks into that internal life that we had at the beginning. So our first head of household failed us. And that was Adam. So now we got to prepare, based off his failure, not only ourselves, but our family for death. So, does anybody disagree with that? Or are we all on the same page of how death was created?
Yeah, we're on the same page.
We're on the same page? We're good. Well, let's get started. So why are we so afraid of death? Why are people so afraid of death?
Because they don't know the truth.
They don't know the truth. And I agree. And I didn't know the truth. But I was reading the King James Version today on the train. And for some reason, I knew what my topic was. I read chapter 2. I read chapter 2, and I want to say it was verse 6, 1 through 6, but it was just the fact that I didn't even realize that that's how death was.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, this is part of my topic tonight. I got to put this in my beginning statement, because this changes the whole thing just for me. But is there any other reason?
Yeah, I'll tell you a story I have one time. My wife and I were flying. I don't know where we were flying back from. And we'd sat on the plane, and you know, these days, there's no such thing as an empty seat.
That's right.
And they had loaded almost the whole plane, and there was an empty seat between my wife and I, and we thought we'd hit the jackpot. So, I mean, that just doesn't happen these days. And they're about to close the plane doors, and in walks this lady, and there's only one empty seat on the plane, and it's next to us. And she's carrying a mixed drink with her, and she sits down between us, and the plane starts to back up a taxi, and the first thing she says is, "I hate to fly."
Mm.
Oh, Lord. Oh, here we go. And she goes, no, I mean, you don't understand. I hate to fly. And as we start to go down the runway to take off, I mean, this lady starts hyperventilating. My wife's rubbing her back, giving her bags to breathe in. And I'm like, oh, man, this is the last doggone thing we need. I mean, this lady is literally flipping out, you know, as we're starting to take off. And finally, when we leveled off, she finally kind of caught her breath and, you know, just was breathing. I was like, geez, you know, wow, what are you so scared of? I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, this lady was petrified. And she said, she looked at me like I had, you know, like I had a horn growing out of my head. She said, "What do you mean, what am I so scared of?" It was like, duh, the plane crashing. But, okay, I said, well, let's look at this logically. I said, the plane crashes, then what? And she looks at me again like I got a horn growing out of my head. Then what? She's like, then we're dead. And I said, okay, so the plane crashes, you die, then what? She goes, then what? There's no more, I'm dead, that's it. I said, okay, the plane crashes, you die, then what? And she looks at me, she goes, you must be a Christian.
Wow.
I said, yeah. She says, well, I don't believe that, and I believe once you're dead, and that's it.
Mm.
You got to get everything you can get now, because once that's it, it's over.
Oh, wow.
And I looked at her, and I went, wow, what a sad way to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we tried to witness a little bit, but, I mean, it was like talking to a rock. I mean, if you have no hope in the future, man, death is a scary, scary thing.
Yeah.
Every day you live, every breath you take, you realize you got one less day.
And and my whole point is, I mean, we've heard this from my parents. We've heard this, you know, we've said this multiple times in our own lives. You're not promised tomorrow. You're really not promised the next second. A lot of people say, you might not be here tomorrow. You know, you might not be here 15 minutes from now.
You got that right. I just ran a 4-mile run. I thought I was going to die in the run.
and I'm just being honest. And I think that is the reason why we're so afraid of death and we don't like talking about death and we try to keep death so far away from us is that it can happen to anybody at any time. We want to think positive and say, I'm going to live to 92. Or
you know,
I'm going to live until 92.
You know, brothers, if I may be an outlier here for just 1 second, it's a very interesting analogy you picked there or similarity you picked there, whatever, because I am terrified of flying. I absolutely hate it, but I'm not terrified of death at all in the least bit. So, you know, it's just kind of interesting. I guess it's because, well, I know why. It's because I've studied aircraft. I've worked on aircraft. You know, I went to an aeronautical university, so I've studied cases. I know just about everything that goes on in an airplane when it's operating. I don't care how big or how small. So my knowledge has caused me to have this great fear of aircraft. But I don't fear death at all.
Man, I don't know if I really need to hear all that, of what you just said. Yeah, because he knows everything that could go wrong.
Yeah, I mean, you just confirmed the reason why I'm so scared of aircraft.
Hey, listen.
And why I need a Bloody Mary every time I got to fly. So I,
that's why they give you free tickets on Southwest for a drink. And I don't drink no more, but I'm getting a drink when I get on the plane. But plane is the safest place to travel.
Yep. Yeah,
but
I mean,
it all comes down to this. Is God in control or is he not?
That's the whole point of this whole conversation. We shouldn't even be concerned. All we should do is be preparing for death. And our topic is death and marriage is because we're going to get to it in a few minutes. This is just a build up to it, and it's going great. But we gotta as men head of household, now that our first head of household screwed it up for everybody. I mean, let's just call it how it is. And now everybody has to, you have to prepare your family for death. Not only your family, but yourself. But if you're afraid of death, how is it easy to prepare for death?
Yeah, it doesn't make it easier.
I think most people just ignore it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually think about death all the time, and most of y'all know, I almost died a couple of weeks ago. I rolled my truck on the beltway several times. But, I mean, I think about, I wasn't really concerned with death, but I don't know if my two daughters were prepared for their mother and father, you know, not being here anymore as a result of, you know, a car accident. And, you know, we talked about planes, and, you know, as you mentioned, Mr. Host, is that, you know, you're actually safer in the air than on the highways and byways, you know, these days. And, you know, literally I was, you know, I'm there financially, you know, they'll be fine, you know, trust me. But emotionally, you know, an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old little girl, you know, losing one or both of their parents would just be, I mean, I don't think you can prepare for that.
Yeah. It's tough. It's tough. And Rodney, I have to be honest with you, I had a lot of things happen this month, June. And one of the reasons why I want to do this topic was because of your story and your testimony that you told the kids in Sunday school. And if you don't mind, if I just can
generate
that story, is that Rodney was teaching class, and one of the things that he said is that, as a testimony, is that he was happy to be here today for Father's Day because he got a gift on Friday from his daughter. And he was like, it's not Father's Day. Father's Day is Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And why did you wait till Sunday to give it? And then he went on to talk about his testimony. Well, the night before, everybody knew, and everybody probably on this call knows, that he was going to go to see Sharday in Baltimore, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had a bad thunderstorm that day, and he got a brand-new truck. And, you know, he's profiling, got the wife on the passenger seat. He all looking good and clean. Him and his wife having a good time. And they probably were having a great time afterwards talking about the concert, but it was raining very, very hard, and we had in the hydroplane.
Mm-hmm.
No one can be prepared for hydroplane.
Mm-hmm.
You can have the best tires in the world, and you hit that wet spot, and your car is on his own.
Yep.
Well, he ended up flipping over and everything, and what I wanted to talk to you is that when he stopped, he got out of the car, looked at the wife, looked at himself, and he said, ouch. The only mark that he had on himself was a cut on his finger.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody from the fire department, police officers, and the people who had stopped said, how in the world did you survive this accident?
Mm-hmm.
With only a scratch, with airbags popping all over the place, And if you know the impact of airbags, it can crush your chest, or it can leave burns on your chest or on your arms, on the side of your face. And it did none of that. However, my thought was, it wasn't that accident and that he was safe. It was the next morning when he said his kid gave him his Father's Day present on the next day. Because I kept thinking about that, and I said, what if she knew? And that's why she gave him that gift on Friday. Because I know he didn't tell her that when he got home that he was almost in an accident.
Nope.
But she knew that there was something going on. I guarantee you, and she gave him his gift right when she saw. She couldn't wait till Sunday.
Yep. Because I told her.
And that goes back. You go ahead, sir.
Yeah. I told her, I specifically told her after school, you know, I had her go to school because I knew that she would be, you know, worried. And she didn't finish. She finished as soon as I picked her up, you know, that's when she gave it to me. And, that, you know, like you said, Mr. Holmes, I was just like, why are you giving me this? It's, you know, it's, and I still hadn't told her yet, but, you know, she was like, here's your Father's Day gift. And, you know, I didn't think much of it, you know, but I was just like, why are you giving this to me? And then I told her actually on the way home, and you know the first thing she said, you know, well, thank God y'all are all right. You know, she said, I guess you got to get a new car. But I mean, that was her first response. But you know, initially when I first saw her, she was just, here's your Father's Day gift. I was like, it's not even Sunday yet, you know.
But if you think of it, and it goes back to Adam, you know, and his religion and how he keeps God first in his family, is that God works in mysterious ways. So a couple of weeks ago, he was talking about having a new kid, going for number three.
Mm-hmm.
And this brings the importance of it wasn't his time.
Mm-hmm.
Because God has more things ahead of him. But because you don't know, he could have died that instant. And does he have a trust fund for his kids? Has he taught the kids that, you know, one day I'm not going to be here? Who's going to take care of the kids when I'm gone? And that's what we want to get into tonight. And I want to ask, why is death so important that we have to grieve, that we have to, you know, we have to get that kind of comfort. We need somebody to comfort us for grieving because we lost a loved one. Why is that comfort important?
You know, death is inevitable, and, you know, as they say, death is one appointment that you cannot miss. You know, you can miss doctor's appointments, or appointments get your oil changed, you know, whatever the case may be, but death is one appointment that you cannot miss. And I think that just knowing, and you know, not just just really living with that idea that, you know, tomorrow is not promised, and you know, with that fact, I think it can help us, you know, if in fact we had to deal with a grieving spouse or a family member, or you know, during the loss of a loved one.
You know, I mean, we can be assured of where we're going, but that doesn't mean we won't miss those people that leave.
Right.
You know, we can have joy, especially if we know where they're going, you know, and we, you know, but we still miss them. You know, I know I lost my grandmother over a year ago, and, I mean, I still miss her a lot. You know, my mother, as a matter of fact, one of my Father's Day gifts, my mother had gotten a T-shirt that my grandmother used to wear. And my mother sews things, and she made a stuffed animal out of that bear for me. And, I mean, that just brought me to tears just because of what it meant to me and how, you know, how I miss her and how I'm still close to her. So even though we can know that people are with Christ, It's still an empty, you know, part that we miss them.
So that empty, It takes something out of your own soul when somebody passes away, is basically what you're saying.
It does, especially if that person is close to you, you know. And we can have joy even in the midst of sorrow. But, you know, we're going to have different seasons in our life. Some will be happy and some will be sad. But we can always have joy knowing that God's in control and where it's going to end. I mean, you know, when you understand the truth, you know, you just got to read the end of the book and find out we win.
Yeah.
And that's all it comes down to. We win. I mean, it doesn't matter what the score is in the third quarter. I mean, it can be as lopsided as it wants. You know, y'all are the Redskin fans. You know, back in the Troy Aikman in days, the Redskins went into the fourth quarter ahead 35-14. And they ended up losing the game in overtime.
Yep.
Well, if you knew the end of the game and you were a Cowboy fan, you wouldn't have sweated it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. We know the end of the game, and we know what's going to happen. We win.
We win.
We win.
I'm writing that down. That's a true statement. Anybody else want to say anything about that?
We still win it.
We win. I mean, I just gotta say, I mean, that is a true fact, because he wanted us to go through certain paths in life to get to the point where we would care about and learn and be knowledgeable about what internal life is. You know, because you are born to die. If anybody realizes that.
Yep.
You were born to leave a seed here and then pass away. I mean, everything that is created dies. I mean, if you plant a plant, a seed of a plant, it's going to grow to its full capacity. It's going to bloom very pretty. It's going to do all that. And then it's going to die. But however, in building those roots, that one plant dies, but it comes back the next season, bigger and stronger.
I think you're missing something.
Am I?
Something. Yeah, yeah. And I do agree with you. We're all born to die, but we're also born to serve. And I believe that we have a purpose, and that's why we're here.
Yep.
And either you're going to do that, you're going to serve that purpose, or you're not. Either you're going to recognize that God has a plan for you. And he has responsibilities for you, and either you're going to do it or you're not going to do it. You see what I'm saying? Just like that tree that blooms, something's going to come by and feed off of that tree. That tree's going to provide shelter or shade for something that needs shade or whatever the case may be. You see
right.
what I'm saying? And when the mm-hmm. job is over, it's gone. When our job is over, we're out of here, and then we'll go on to the next assignment, wherever that may be. You know, but I think that we have to realize that we're here for a reason. We're not here just to get fat bank accounts and make babies, but we are definitely here for God's purpose.
Amen.
Words. Good words.
Good words. So I want to get into the marriage part of death. And I want to start off slow. So I want to start off with your wife or girlfriend. And someone close to them passes away. How do you help your wife grieve to get through that hurt? Is there a way that you can, or do you just leave her alone and let her be?
Well, no, I can tell you how not to help. My wife had a great uncle die probably about a year ago, and you know, great uncle. I mean, it's. I didn't think she was that close to him or whatever. And she went to the funeral and everything, but, you know, I never got the sense at any point that, you know, he was, you know, a special great aunt or a great uncle or whatever the case may be. So I didn't, you know, I didn't console her or anything. You know, I was just like, all right, how was the funeral? And actually, I had an issue that I wanted to talk to her about our relationship, you know, when she got back from the funeral. And I was like, I was a funeral. Oh, and by the way, we need to talk about this. And she got so offended
because I was not empathetic or sympathetic, you know, to her needs, and I was unaware that she was. I knew that she was grieving, but I didn't know it was like that. You know, I didn't know that this uncle was that close to her, where, you know, and death affects everybody. But I didn't, you know, I guess to me, I was thinking about it from, you know, from my perspective in my shoes. If it was my great uncle, you know, I went to the funeral, I mean, it would have, you know, God rest his soul, and then I would have came back on home, and, you know, all things would have been, you know, back to normal, you know, per se. But, you know, literally with her, she got so offended because she was like, you're not even, you know, sympathetic. My great uncle just died, and I really, you know, was close to him. I was like, it all came from nowhere to me, and I just felt so bad, you know, because I would not have approached her, you know, with what was on my mind about, you know, it was something that we were dealing with, and, you know, but literally as soon as she got back, I was just like, we need to hash this out right now. And she's like, are you serious? I just got back from a funeral. So that's a way, you know, not to deal with it, you know, but I'm sure somebody else can explain how to deal with it. But that is a way not to properly console your wife. But that's just my story.
How you guys doing? It's Mike.
Been absolutely. What's up, brother? Welcome.
I just lost my aunt myself. And those who know me know that, you know, me and my aunt are closer than me and my mother. You know. You know, I know what your wife's going through, you know, because even my first wife came to the funeral, you know. She came all the way up here from Georgia, you know, just to be on the funeral because she knew how close me and my aunt was. But my family had a problem with that, you know. I was like,
oh.
You know what I'm saying? I said, just the mother of my three kids, you know what I'm saying? She wants to come, that's cool. And they were worried about my new girlfriend now. They were cool. They're like, hey, glad to see you, glad to meet you, blah, 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 you know. My boys are up here for the summer. And everybody's getting along. That's great. But except for my mother. My mother's having a problem with my first wife coming up. I don't get it, but it is what it is.
What did your girlfriend say when your first wife came up?
Oh, she was cool with it. She was cool with it.
Well, your mom thought it was disrespectful?
My mom and my first wife never, ever got along. I mean, I dated my first wife in high school. They didn't like each other then. So you imagine, that's 25 years later. They still don't like each other, you know? So it's just what it is, you know? Like, our families are still close, even though we're not married. We've been divorced like 8 years. Mm-hmm. But our families are still close. Like, her niece still calls me Uncle Mike. She calls me up. She just got married. She's like, hey, Uncle Mike, I'm getting married. I just want to let you know. You know, I mean, you don't get that phone calls when you know, if you're not if I was a, you know, crappy uncle, you know, I wouldn't have got that phone call at all. You know, but she stayed with us for about 3 years when she was up here. So she's very near her. So, you know, she's family.
I think that's really a testament to her, you know, to know that, of course, your mother was going to be there. And for her to still, you know, come out and just represent. But would you say that your first wife, in any way, was she better at helping you grieve than your current girlfriend, or was it just not an issue, about the same, or, you know,
It's hard to explain because I guess I was with my wife over 20 years, so, you know, she knows that me and my Aunt Sandy were like, I mean, that's my mother. I mean, if you ever ask anybody, I mean, Tony should know, but, you know, I'm not really that close to my mother, for real. Like most men are, they call their mom once a week, something like that. I talk to my mom every 3 months or so, you know.
Mm.
And I got
so
really
what if your mom died?
Excuse me?
What if your mom had died?
I would grieve too, but it wouldn't be as hard as my aunt, because we were inseparable, you know. My aunt always lived close to me, you know. I moved to a place called Marble House Apartment Building. She moved five doors down from me, you know. I moved to Temple Hill. She moved to Temple Hill. You know, she's always right behind me, you know. She's always been close. My kids are more close. My kids know my aunt better than they know my grandmother, their own grandmother. I should tell you something right there, how, you know. So I can understand your wife saying that, you know, she was closer to her uncle than probably you realize, because, you know, you never know what happened in her childhood to make her feel that loss, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
So I kind of understand. You don't know what happened in her life. Yes, you've been in her life, what, more than 10 years. We know that, right? But
yeah.
You don't know what happened. You don't know what happened 25 years ago or, you know, 30 years ago with your wife that put that, you know, love for her uncle in her heart like that. So she probably is feeling a greater loss than you expected her to feel. You know what I'm saying? Because you didn't even go to the funeral. Am I correct?
That's correct. Yep.
See, that part right there is hurtful right there, that you didn't even go to the funeral. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Did she ask you to go? I'm just asking a question. Did she ask
you? Oh, no. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, I couldn't go, you know, because we got kids and everything, and, you know, so I had to.
Somebody had to stay behind with the kids. Okay, I get it.
Yeah. And but it was, you know, it was a good question because, I mean, she didn't expect me to go, and, you know, and I wasn't. You know, I wasn't making arrangements to drop off the kids and make sure they were taken care of. It was just like, you know, I'm going and, you know, you're staying back with the kids. That was fine. It was just when she came back, I didn't approach her right because I was insensitive to the fact, like you said, I didn't know that their relationship was like that because I don't have a relationship, you know, like that with my great uncle or great aunt. So I was just kind of, took me for a loop because it was unexpected.
Yeah, then you. I feel you. And answer your question: had my mom had died, I don't think she would have came up. I know she wouldn't have came up. My first wife would have never came up. My mother passed away.
And Rodney, I kind of, in a weird kind of way, understand your take on it, because what I'm gathering is she never really expressed any long relationship with this uncle, right? It was
right.
Very little talk of him, you know. You knew
yep.
he existed, and that's probably all that it was.
Yep.
So it was like, okay, you know, just another family member died. You know, I'm glad you're back safe now. I need to talk to you about something.
Pretty much. And I guess, you know, me and her are different with, and as we're talking about death tonight, and I told y'all before, I'm a little morbid, so... Like, it's not going to get – it caught me off guard when I almost died, but when somebody around me dies or a family member or whatever, I'm not that surprised because we all know we're going to die at some point. We have an appointed time. You know, so I'm not as – you know, and depending on who it is, of course, it's going to be different levels of emotion. But, again, I'm already thinking, like, you know, tomorrow is not promised. So with family, you know, no matter who it is, I'm just kind of like, hey – You know, in some respect, it was bound to happen at some point, you know, but again, and she's not like that, of course, obviously, this is a great uncle that she was really close to, and she said, have great family ties and everything, not that I don't, but I guess for me personally, it's different, you know, that
yeah.
if someone dies, it's just, and maybe that's the man in me, you know, I'm just
yeah.
like, I'm not shedding too many tears, it's just like, it is what it is.
Say that, did you, Rodney?
Hmm?
You didn't say that, did you?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
You know me. Yeah, you know me better than that. Yeah, yeah.
And right.
I just like Tony said, you're back, and yeah, we got an issue we need to talk about. And that was
and
the wrong time. Yes, sir.
And Rodney, you keep mm-hmm. saying that you almost died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you really feel mm-hmm. that way? I mean, because,
well,
you know, you had a car accident, your car rolled over, not to slight it. Your car rolled
yes.
over and you came out with one scratch. So you were protected. I mean, let's just
yes.
say it. But there's people that have been on their deathbed, bullet holes, cancer, whatever the case may be, and then survive it. I'm thinking
yes.
that, you know, not to just downplay what happened to you, but I've seen people that have almost died, truly like 2 seconds away and they're out of here. In some way that they, you know, I think that God had a different plan for you. We all know this. So I don't
sure.
think that yours was almost die. I think yours was just like you said before, it was just a slight wake-up call.
Yeah, and I say that, and that's a good word, I say that because the way the car twisted and ended up and landed, it was a myriad of ways that I could have died. You know, but absolutely not. I was not on my deathbed. My wife was not on her deathbed, you know, thank God. But, I mean, you're exactly right that, you know, so did I cheat death? you know, I don't know, you know, but I just think that it was not my time to go. And but it could, you know, it could have went different. That's why I say I almost died, because it could have went a lot different than what it was. It was just a lot of, you know, as you say, protections around, you know, how we came out of that whole situation. But,
you had angels, you had God, and you had a good airbag system. You had a nice car with all that airbags everywhere, and, you know, you know, and not cheating death, because normally when somebody cheats death, the person with them dies.
Mm-hmm.
And the people are like, well, how come you didn't die? Oh, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, one thing, like, if you look at the pictures that I took, I didn't even notice, but I had my Bible in my console. And as we were flipping around, it's just a small, you know, I can actually carry it in my suit pocket or whatever. I carry it everywhere, but it was in my console. And as we flipped around and everything, it ended up landed on the, you know, ended up resting on the side, on the passenger side. Like, the Bible was still the same place where it was. And when I took the pictures, I just happened to have a camera in my pocket, because we were at the concert, and, you know, I was like, I need to take pictures of this, you know. And then I went and took pictures, you know, when it was towed to the lot, and I took pictures of the inside, and the Bible was still there amongst the glass and everything. And that's one picture that people, they were like, I see you had your Bible in there. I mean, out of all the pictures I took, you know, that's one comment they made. They were like, we're grateful that you made it, but I noticed that you had your Bible was right there, you know. And I didn't think much of it, because I just took the picture of the inside of the cab with the glass. But that picture stood out to a lot of people. And you really can't, it's not really that visible. You can see it, but it just kind of caught me off guard, because I was thinking that they would be, oh, the damage, you know, that I thought that that's what they would point out. But, you know, what I didn't tell y'all is that one thing, when I went to retrieve my stuff out of it, and I got my Bible out and everything, all my stuff, but it was three things I couldn't get out of the car. And that was, I had a CD that was still in there, and I had a DVD, a kid's DVD. But one thing I could not get out was my jumper cables. And I had some nice jumper cables, fellas, you know, where it's, you know, it's a child could, you know, jump your car, because it had red lights and green lights. It was pretty. Actually, my parents got it for me as a gift.
Yeah, the top of the line set.
Yeah, top of the line. And I couldn't get to them because the trunk was so dented in. It was like under this little, like, hidden compartment under, you know, behind the back seat. Just like extra space, extra storage space. And I couldn't get to them. You know, because of the trunk was all dented in. And I got to thinking about it, and it was like I carried those jumper cables around in my vehicle in case my battery died, you know. But as I said last week, you know, the message that I got was that I wasn't, even though I had the Bible in there, I wasn't doing the things as far as spending time with God that I should have. And to relate that back to the jumper cables, you know, I didn't care if I had a dead battery. I would just get a jump, you know, because I got these nice jumper cables, and, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm cool. But I wasn't doing the things as far as, you know, just upkeep and maintenance in my personal life, you know, because I was just dependent, you know, on it was kind of ironic how it tied together, because I was, you know, I was living my life as just like, well, you know, I'll be cool. If I need something, I got my Bible right here. If the car, you know, the battery dies, I got my, you know, jumper cables in the back, and I ain't worried about it. I wasn't being proactive in seeking and searching like I should, you know, in the same way, you know, with, you know, just relating back to the car. I do keep maintenance on a car, but I didn't care if, you know, my battery died, but I was spiritually dying. And it was just crazy how it, you know, I could not get my jumper cables, and I was just like, I need my jumper cables, you know. But now,
I got to ask you one question.
Uh huh.
And we haven't had it yet, but how is your wife doing? We haven't had how is she doing at night? How is she doing now? And how do you think she's going to do when we have another rainstorm?
Well, number one, she didn't want to get another SUV, and I haven't gotten a car yet. Still waiting on the insurance to settle me out. the vehicle's total, but they haven't confirmed that yet. But, you know, the first thing she said, she didn't want to get another SUV because obviously she didn't want to roll around in the rain or any other situation because it was top heavy. But, you know, other than that, we talked about it and we need the space. We already got two kids, and eventually, sometime down the road, we'll probably have three. So we just need the space. So it's, you know, no grief. But as far as, you know, she had some apprehension on getting another SUV. But, you know, as far as the accident and everything, I mean, she's fine. Of course, we're just mentally shaken up. But as I was saying, the result of that is that I'm praying more, spending more time, you know, reading and stuff that I wasn't doing prior to the accident. So as Tony was saying, you know, it was a wake-up call, you know, message received. It was like, you know, it was like I could have, you know, that could have been it, you know, but it wasn't. So now it's like I had to change, you know, what I was doing in my life. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because my concern would be when the next heavy rain is, how will that affect? Will you drive different? Will you?
Oh yeah. I would drive a lot different. You know, drive a lot slower. You know, I was on the Beltway and doing Beltway speeds. But I wasn't going super fast, but I was going more than, you know, about 60, 65 in the rain. But, of course, now, lesson learned.
That's all right. Thank you for telling that story. I appreciate letting us get a little bit in your personal life there. I want to tell something about myself. And if somebody else wants to tell something about them, that will help everybody out. My wife, and she's going to kill me for saying this, but it needs to be said. She has a fear of swimming. She has a fear of swimming because her nephew passed away. And this was when she was young. Her nephew passed away. Her brother and her nephew were real close in age. I want to say he was like 8 or 9, 7, 8, 9. Knew how to swim. Huh? Yeah, he drowned.
Okay.
He drowned. And ever since then, she had a fear of swimming, fear of water. And it came in effect when we had our kids. It came back up because I know how to swim. I like water. I wanted the kids to go get swimming lessons, we go jump and have fun in the summer, go to the pool, do all that. But because she never got over her grieving of that loss of her nephew, summer day at a pool, we had some issues, straight out issues about the kids swimming. And I said, they're with me. I'm not going to allow anything to happen. I'm going to be in the water with them. They're going to be okay. But we literally would have disagreements about swimming with the kids. And it was because she never got over that grieving of her nephew to the point where she wouldn't go near a swimming pool or the beach. Wouldn't go to the beach. Wouldn't even put her feet in the water because she was that terrified of water. And it took me some time, but I had to one, show as an example that I can swim. Two, that each kid are safe with me. We're in the water, and you know, eventually she got in the water. Then all four of us in the water. And last year, you know, my godfather, he has a pool at his house. He taught her how to swim, gave her a life raft, and they had a little swimming lesson. And she, just as last year, got over that fear of water. But it was a long fet because I could never get my kids to go to swimming lessons. They got swimming lessons they'd be giving down here at North Point High School and over the summer, and I could never put them in the class. because she just had that fear. And if I wasn't there, then they couldn't go. And once she got over that fear, it was good. But it was a very long grieving, and I had to do all that I could do to help her grieve and get over it. And that one grief affected our relationship up to this point. I don't know if that's happened in somebody else's relationship where somebody has passed away suddenly or something that has made tragedy in their family where it's affected their relationship with their wife. Does anybody have anything on the line that may have happened to?
Yeah. My wife experienced a tragedy when she was 12 years old. She suffered a tragic and tremendous loss, and she witnessed it. And because of that, I'm not trying to say, you know, people want to compare events, but her ability to relate to other people's loss, you know, someone else loses a family member or loses a friend, she's not able to relate because she's had such a traumatic experience. You know, her stuff is so off the scale what she had to experience. And so, you know, it definitely affects her, you know, and, you know, we have to remember dates, you know, the date stuff happened, you know, because it affected, and this stuff happened, you know, years ago, back when she was 12, and, you know, it's something that we're dealing with even today. And, you know, my dad watched his cousin drown, and, you know, he still is not over that. I mean, my dad is almost, you know, he's over 60, and he watched his cousin drown, he's a little boy, and still to this day will not get him water.
And I wonder, too, with the drowning, that is some sense of guilt. You know, if you're sitting there watching someone drown or you happen to watch them drown, it has to be some level of, well, I could have done this or I could have tried to save them. But maybe they couldn't, but they still dealing with that. They may have that level of guilt that I should have done this or I should have done this or whatever the case may be. So, you know, I think that, you know, that could be something in it. But, you know, even you, Mr. Host, you explained a situation where you, you know, saw someone, you witnessed, you know, death in your childhood.
What's that?
With your friend, right?
Mm-hmm. I did. Hello? Yeah, and when I was young, even though I got over it a little bit, when I was 6 or 7 years old, I was over at my friend's house, Chris. And when he went into his dad's cabinet and got his dad's gun out, and he was playing with it, and the gun went off. And he died. And, you know, so that stays in my heart right now where, you know, my grandfather, he showed me what a gun, the power of the gun, and what, you know, how it can harm you, but how is you can use it for enjoyment, where, like, we were hunters. You know, I'm a country boy, so we went hunting a lot in the summer. But it took my mom and my dad years. And, I mean, I was young, so I was able to get over it quicker. But it took them years to get over that. And just me being around a gun. And to the point where my dad came one day and took my guns out of my house and was like, you're not going to have these guns around these kids. So somebody coming here now, I got to put my hands on them because it was the fact that once I had kids, we don't want history to repeat itself. That I'm not here one day, you know, I'm at work, they here, school's out, and they decide to go and find the key, even if it has a lock, they know where the key is, and they get the gun, and they go out there, and it goes off accidentally. And I lose one of my children. So there's no guns in my house now. But I got all the other safety measures in this house, just in case this is recorded.
Just so you know, at Home Depot and Lowe's, they have a combination lockbox. So, you know, if they don't know the combination, they can't get in to the lockbox for your key to the to the gun. I mean, so there's ways that you can still protect your family and not worry about them, you know.
Yeah.
Getting in.
Yeah, because that would be the only thing is the fear of guns. I mean, guns now are so unprotective. They're used for if you hiccup, I'm going to shoot you, you know. So they're not used for just protection anymore. They're used to solve problems. And because they're used to solve problems, even games on TV now. I mean, these kids, I was reading an article every day about the violence and then how these kids are being more violent because these games are more violent. These Xbox games, these Wii games, all those games are so violent now. And they're in violent where they're so real. Where if somebody gets shot, you see the blood, the hole, where they got shot at, you see the whole thing. And now kids aren't, for one, I mean, it makes kids not afraid of death, but it also makes kids not too concerned about life either.
And it's not just kids, it's adults too, because I know we're all guilty at some point in our lives where you had the opportunity to see, you know, someone die in a shootout or whatever on the internet. That you know, we're drawn to that, you know, naturally, and it's crazy. But you know, you hear somebody, oh, they had a shootout and they died, and you just click here and you can watch it. You know, and I actually found myself watching it was a robbery somewhere in Maryland, and you know, literally they showed the shootout, and the man died as a result of the shootout. And the news cops just had captured it. And, you know, I'm sitting there watching it, but in a sense, I'm desensitized to that was somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm watching it on the internet, on my laptop screen, and but then I had to catch myself. I'm like, wow, you know, I just witnessed somebody, you know, being shot to death. You know, granted, he was a criminal, but still, it's a life. But I mean, with these, not just kids, you know, adults, we're desensitized, you know, to that kind of stuff today.
All right. Anybody else? Well, it's 10 o'clock, and I got one for you. I told you this was getting ready to hit the soul, so here you go. What if you lost your wife suddenly? How do you help comfort a grieving kid, your kids, and yourself at the same time as head of household?
Yeah,
we all know they're looking at you.
Yeah, you got to be strong, you know, for them. But I think that's a great question, Mr. Host, because how do you articulate that mommy's not coming back?
Yeah.
You know, especially to a younger child, you know, a teenager or a young adult, you know, they'll still have difficulty with it, but it'll be, you know, challenging, you know, to break that news. And, you know, I actually, as I tell you, I'm morbid. You know, tomorrow's not promised. So I actually think about that, you know, if, God forbid, my wife were to leave unexpectedly, and how would I respond to that? And the one thing, fellas, I cannot do is do hair.
I got two daughters, and that's one area that I'm not in. I don't even get involved in that. So my wife takes care of, you know, the hair and everything like that. But it's nothing else that I cannot do for them. And I always think about if there's something that were to happen to my wife tomorrow, tonight, or whatever the case may be, my next thing is, like, I gotta find a woman to do their hair. You know, whether it be a neighborhood lady, whether it be, you know, somebody I know, a friend, a family, or whatever the case may be. Because I've got everything else. I can cook. You know, I can work out the schedule where I can pick them up from school and daycare and, you know, all of that stuff. I can help with the homework. You know, so I've actually thought, you know, to your question, Mr. Ho, I've actually thought that far down the road. And but at the same token, I haven't, you know, even though my wife jokes on me, like, you need to start learning how to do some hair. You know, these girls' hair, I'm getting, you know, because on the weekends, that's pretty much, you know, between Saturday and Sunday, somebody's head is getting done, you know, for a couple of hours. But I've just stayed away from it because she's there, you know, and she does it. And, but, you know, everything else I can do, and I would just continue to, as much as possible, just to continue as, you know, life as we know it, you know, without my wife around. But it would definitely be hard having that conversation, you know, with the kids that it's just going to be us now. But I've thought about it too. There's nothing really I can't do around the house. You know, I can wash my own clothes and that kind of stuff, iron. Nothing I can't do in that realm, but, you know, I will have to get somebody to do their hair, you know, and that's probably something I don't even know if I would attempt to learn. You know, I would just get somebody to do it, you know, for me, so.
I mean, I don't really know, like, if that would happen to my wife, I don't really think that I would, and this is just me, just the day-to-day household responsibilities, that'd be so far from my thought process. I'd be thinking about this companion that I've had all this time. I've done all these things with. I've shared all these great moments with. Is no longer here. And how do you move past that? I mean, you can get somebody through the hair, but how do you get past the point that your friend is gone?
Right. And I don't think you can really, that's not something you can actually plan for. And you know, work out a way that I'm going to do this, so you can go to your cabinet and pull out your list that you created, and you're going to say these questions, you're going to say these, or maybe not questions, but you're going to say these things to the kids, and you know what I mean, that's not something that you can really be prepared for.
No.
Like that. That's because, for one, you don't know how you're going to respond to it. You don't. And because we don't, I mean, yeah, you're going to grieve. I get that. But you don't know how you're going to grieve. You don't know if you're going to be completely in shock. You don't know if you'll be hysterical. You don't know if you'll slip into a depression. I know what you think you want to do or what you might want to, but, you know, and then if you don't know how you're going to react, you most certainly don't know how someone else is going to react. So you don't know how the kids are going to react. And each emotion, each way that they react, if you have multiple kids, you're going to have to treat all of them, and you're just going to have to be there, and you're going to have to comfort, and, you know, just like as you were talking earlier about a wife, if she loses someone close to her. I know my wife lost her best friend to cancer, and you know, I watched her go through that, and the only thing I could do is really be there and encourage, because sometimes being too close was upsetting to her. You know, she wanted some time alone and deal with the situation, how she wanted to deal with it. The only thing I could really do was, and the only advice I could kind of give, is to be aware, be alert, be hypersensitive, if you will, on because you don't want them to slip into a depression either. You gotta find that, or walk that fine line of whether or not they're removing themselves too far and slipping into some type of depression, and or they just need some space to think and mourn, because everyone needs to do that, but you can't let them stay there too long. So you kind of have to watch and see what's going on. Do the dishes, you know, after dinner. Maybe cook the dinner. if you have to do that.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. Telling somebody today how this happened, where a man He didn't do the right thing, but the boys were strong enough to get by. I have a friend right now who lost his, when we were in high school, I want to say senior year, dad, mom, beautiful mom, great dad, strong worker, you know, they would just get ready to buy the wife's dream house, you know, it, from scratch up. She designed it. She did the whole nine. They were going to closing. She was going to meet him there from closing from work. And on her way there, the trailer came off of 18-wheeler, and she ran right into it. Died instantly. And the kid, my one of my friends, Chuck, and his little brother, they took it hard, but they took it.
Mm-hmm.
But their father, Chuck's, Big Chuck, he lost it. He tried to get over it by just, you know, having women and women and just women and women and partying and drinking and drugs. When his job moved to Memphis, he came back. When he came back, he was a crackhead. And he never got over the death of his wife. And he never consoled his kids about the death of his wife. And he ended up losing. Here's a guy who has everything. And because he lost that companionship of his wife, he literally lost his soul. And it took him a long time. He's not on drugs now. He got off. He got on relapse, But he's, as far as I know, he's been good and clean for the past couple 5 years.
And I think that's because we don't prepare for our wife to go. You know, we think that we're going to, you know, be married and happily ever after, and we're going to be 90 years old sitting on a rocking chair, you know, and, you know, just enjoying our grandkids. And, you know, the honest fact, like you just, the example you just said, that didn't happen in his situation. And I think that we have to. Go ahead.
You know, Rodney, I've been sitting here, and I've just been trying to imagine my life without my wife if she died suddenly. And the concept of that idea is just so painful that I cannot wrap my mind around.
Mm. Are we hitting the souls now? See, now we hitting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hear you saying, I know it's got to be done. I know,
right.
You know, never know, you know, within a second God may call a home. But
yeah.
It's like my mind, it's just like me trying to speak Chinese. It's just like you telling me to give a speech in Chinese. And I don't know Chinese.
I believe you, because right now my wife is on her way home. She works second shift. We don't like it, but that's what her job is. She works second shift at the hospital, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I know she gets off at 12:01. And the only reason why she ain't calling because she knows it's my call tonight. So she did text. But if she's on the road, she's on the road with the kids, she's on, you know, if she's not by my side, I'm thinking about her every single minute until I see her face. Just because I may not be promised to see her. We can argue, but even in the morning, I'll still say I love you because I want to make sure the last words that ever comes out my mouth is I love you. So when we leave for the day, when we get off the phone, every time we're on the phone, you know, that's my preparedness.
Okay.
That's my preparedness, by just saying, you know, I'm always here for you. I love you. If you don't see me again, you know I love you.
Mm-hmm.
Can I change gears?
Yeah.
Because right where we are is a good place. Where we are in this conversation is a very good place. Like the brother just said, he would not know what to do. And I wouldn't either, to be honest with you. But let's flip it. Let's say it's us that are gone, and they have to break the news to the children. They have to find a way to manage the house, to find a new friend to talk to, or whatever, just cope. And the question that I want to throw out there is, well, there are some things that are going to happen that are unavoidable, like the tractor-trailer incident. And then there's other things that men were guilty of, and that's maintaining our health.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we don't, you know, we're too manly to go get a digital exam for prostate cancer. We won't go get a colonoscopy to find out whether we got colon. Things that we know that are taking us out of the game, we won't address for other reasons. But then we sit back and say, yeah, you know, but if my wife died, I wouldn't know what to do. But what if you died as the head of the household? What would she do? And what if we died because we didn't address something, some routine maintenance that should be addressed? That's the question I want to throw out there. I mean, are we responsible? Are we responsible enough to make sure that we're doing our due diligence to be around?
You know what? I'm glad you brought this up. I'm literally going to have to fix, going to have to switch medical carriers from Blue Cross Blue Shield to Kaiser Permanente because of what you just said.
Mm.
Everybody wants men to get prostate exams, to get colon exams, but call your insurance, call the doctor, and give them your age, and tell them you just want to get one. And watch what they tell you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You're not old enough. And it's like, wait a minute. Katy Couric's husband died in his mid-30s.
Yeah.
Everybody know it can happen.
It can happen.
So, basically, I got to call the doctor and said I haven't had a bowel movement in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
If we got to go through this whole take time off work, go to this specialist, before somebody finally sign off on me getting a colonoscopy or a prostate exam.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, man, you know, it, everybody knows it's got to be done. And when you want to get it done because you're not 50, you know, they're like, oh, no, you're not old enough to worry about that right now. Like, really?
Mm.
I'm in my mid-30s. I'm about to turn 40. I know I got to get this done.
Mm-hmm. You're trying to
it
be
runs in my family, but my insurance says I have to be 40 before I can get it done.
Yeah. Yeah, and Kate, like I said, Katy Couric's husband died, he's 36.
Well, I think to respond to that, I think you have to, you know, do what you can. At least you made the call, brother, to say, hey, you know, I'm trying to get checked up, and you know, what the result, you know how much insurance is going to cover, if they're going to cover anything at all. But at least you took the initiative to make the call, to be proactive and say, I need to get checked out, because a lot of brothers haven't. You know, and, you know, as T-Hawk said, it's our responsibility. And I think it's funny that you say that because, you know, just last week I had some slight chest pains. You know, when they say you have chest pain, oh, you need to go to the emergency room, that's serious. But, you know, I've been traveling the past couple of weeks and a little bit of stress, but what it came back to is that, you know, I don't work out. And I used to work out. And as y'all know, you know, I'm about to, you know, I need to be working out because I got to, you know, be working on this number 3. I need to be in good shape, but I want to be in good shape, you know, in general for the long term of my wife and my, you know, 2 kids now and possibly 3. But it's my responsibility to go downstairs, make some time, and turn on the treadmill. It's not that hard, but it's my responsibility to do that. My wife is not going to be like, Roddy, you need to, and I'm a little guy, you know, I don't have no weight problems, I eat whatever I want, you know, I don't have no high blood pressure, no diabetes or anything, but that could happen, you know, at the rate I'm going. So, you know, to your question, it is my responsibility. I need to, you know, and we need to be proactive rather than waiting. Oh, Roddy, you know, your blood pressure is high a little bit. You know, what are you doing? What are you eating? Are you working out? You know, are you walking? I mean, so I think we shouldn't wait for a bad report from the doctor. We just need to, you know, be proactive,
yeah.
You know, and start taking care of ourselves because you're exactly right.
Yeah, because I think that it would be harder, and this is just my opinion, but I think that the conversation would be a little harder for them to have with the children than us.
Yeah, and just imagine, like you said, Tony, the trailer coming off of the truck. I mean, that's something. something you can't control that.
Can't control it.
But you can control what you're putting in your body. You know, are you taking vitamins? Are you drinking enough water? You know, are you exercising? I mean, we can control that. So, you know, I think the conversation would be hard either way. You know,
either
but it would be easier, you know, if you did, you know, God forbid, get in a car accident versus what daddy died of a heart attack because he was eating chicken and sitting on the couch and not doing anything.
Yeah.
You know, and he died at 50 because he wasn't doing what he was supposed to do. You know, so I think it's absolutely our responsibility.
And, I mean, to add on to that, I mean, that was one of my questions I was going to bring up, is that how do we prepare them? Let's say that we do find out we have prostate cancer. How do we prepare the family that you may not make it out of? We're going to fight it. We're going to fight it. It's going to be a fight. However, I may not make it.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, Mr. Oaks. And sorry I'm talking a lot, but, you know, death is near and dear to my heart right about now. But literally, I was on a plane last week, and I was flying on Southwest. And I'd never flown on Southwest. I flew on a bunch of airlines before. This is my first time on Southwest. And they have open seating. And I thought this was the dumbest thing in the world. It's just like all the other planes. It's like I have my seat. I go, you know, find my seat number, and I sit down. But you get on Southwest, you get on, especially if you're not in I don't travel first class. You know, I'm a regular traveler. So, you know, I get on probably at the middle or towards the end. But you get on the plane, you can sit in where you want, but everybody has either taken an aisle seat or a window seat. So you're looking down the plane, and it's like, all right, you know, who's – and I sit there, and they look at you like, you know, so anyway, long story short, I ended up finding an aisle seat way in the back. And, you know, I had a – uh-oh, somebody got a dog. I had a middle seat open, you know, and somebody was in the window seat already. And, you know, then other people, you know, that same look, it's like, well, is that seat taken? Is that middle seat taken? So there's all these middle seats left on the plane. So this woman comes back, and she said, you know, is that seat? I said, no, absolutely not. You know, I was like, have a seat. And I get to talking to her, and somehow we just – and it was an hour flight, but, you know, we started talking about – you know, she saw I was married, and she was like, you got kids and everything. And, you know, we just started talking about where are you going. And she was saying that she was going to some hospital in Pittsburgh or whatever. And she said that she has a brain tumor, and she's – was given 6 months to live. And she was telling me about her kids and how her hair, that was a wig, which I didn't know. And but when she told me that, I was just like, here I am, you know, getting on the plane, fussing about sitting, you know, crawling over, just asking somebody to move over or let me sit in their middle seat. And, you know, just with that attitude, and here's a lady that's been given 6 months, well, actually I think she had 4 months, at this point, but she had been given 6 months to live. And, you know, she was telling me how difficult it was, you know, on her children and how she's basically just in and out of the hospital. You know, just she says she's a lab rat. You know, she's just getting treatment, but there's really nothing that they can do for her. You know, it's just the treatment. It's just to sustain her, you know, for whatever long or whatever. So, you know, it was a different outlook because I was just like, man, you know, here I am. I don't have I wasn't given X amount of time to live. And, you know, here she is. And back to your question, I mean, she was saying how difficult it was for her to be traveling. And, you know, back to what the brother said about the insurance, she said the insurance does not pay for her plane tickets, you know, back and forth to these hospitals. And she has to fly because it's not in her area. So she's flying all over the country. To get to these specialists and everything, and it's just to, just you know, just to sustain her, but it's not, you know, anything. So, but I mean, it is. She just talked about how it's difficult when you tell your kids, like, yeah, I'm not gonna be around by Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember the story when 1999. My mom said, come over to the house. I said, I'm coming over the house. She just said, come over to the house. I said, all right, I'm coming. So me and Sharon, we go over to the house. And I said, what do you want to have a family meeting for? What are we talking about? Because I thought this is still the time, you know, early with her and Sharon, they didn't get too much along with each other. So, you know, it's like, oh, Lord, what I got to hear now? And, you know, she, being the mother that she is, great mom, was getting ready to prepare the whole family at one time for her departure. That she found out that she has breast cancer. And we all know, and she prepared us from the beginning because she told us, and we talked about this 3 years ago on this call. It was one of the first years, I think it was the first year where we talked about knowing your family history, about your medical history.
Mm-hmm.
And she already had prepared us. Now, I didn't know that she was already preparing us for death by saying, here's your family medical history.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your dad's side. Here's, you know, my dad still hasn't told me all the stuff from his side of the family, but my mom knows it all. She knows both sides. So I kind of know the family history. Now, this history has now hit her. And she went through it. We prepared. We all studied, learned. She gave us all the information. It went away. Then now we like, all right, we cool. But then it came back.
Mm.
Prepared, went through it. She went through the pain, and it went away again. Then the third time, she felt another lump. Prepared, went through the pain, came back benign. Right? So these things happen, and we were, the more times it happened, the more we were already prepared. And we knew that she can beat it because she's beaten it before. So it wasn't as bad as it was that first time hearing it. You know what I mean? But then a couple years ago, I got a tumor where I couldn't even breathe at night. I couldn't breathe my nose, both sides of my nostrils, and I had to have surgery. And I wasn't as stressed as, you know, probably my wife was, because I already knew that history of my mom. If she could beat it, then I got that same gene that I can beat it. But it got me to the point where I had to do something. I had to prepare myself and my family. And one thing that men, that we want to talk about right now at 10:30, that we got to talk about is how to prepare our families for death. And we have to do it by, one, knowing our medical history, as we're talking about it here. And two, a living will. Guys, if you don't have a will, you need to go tomorrow and go on the internet and find out how you can get one. Because as we already found out throughout this whole night of the call, you're not promised tomorrow morning. You can sleep. My wife tells me, she gets concerned. She wants me to go see a sleep doctor because she says I stopped breathing that night.
Let me take that a step further, Mr. Host, and I'll throw this out to the group. Would you rather have the doctor give you, you know, X amount of time to live, or would you rather go suddenly? And for example, an accident or you know, whatever. If you could pick, hypothetically, I know this is crazy, but would you rather have, okay, Mr. Smith, you've got 5 months to live, or would you rather go in an accident? Either way, you got to prepare. We're talking about preparation, but if you could have your way, would you rather know, okay, on November the 3rd, 2011, that's when I'm going to be out of here? Or would you rather go suddenly? I'll throw that out to the group.
I'd rather go suddenly myself. I'd rather go suddenly. I ain't going to lie. I mean, I witnessed both. Where I had a cousin, my uncle, long about when I was like 18, he died of AIDS. And he died suddenly. It wasn't like he everybody knew what he had, and he just passed away, and he didn't know. He just fell into a coma, and 2 days later, he was dead.
Wow.
He was dead. Then I just went through with my aunt. She had a bad heart. What they tell me is she had a bad heart. She had heart transplant, and my aunt's only like 57. She died at 57. So 55, she had a heart transplant, and they said, oh, she'll be okay after this, blah, 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 and she just never recovered from that thing. Just never was the same person. And she just faded away, slowly but surely. Just faded away, went to the hospital a million times, and just faded away. You know? So I'd rather go quick. So I'm going to go get hit by that bus or something, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
I would rather go quick just as long as I'm not on the plane.
As long as you what?
As long as I'm not on a plane. A meteorite can hit me from the sky. A shark can jump out of the water and crash through my car window. I don't care. As long as I ain't on a plane, I'm straight.
And like you said, you know, your will and all that stuff. My only will is my kids. You know, take care of your... My middle son is autistic. He's really autistic, and I just told mother to make sure he eats, make sure he has a place to stay. That's all you have to do. That's it. I don't want nothing else. I don't. It's sort of like, you know, I'm a single man now, so I said, when these women out here get crazy and shoot me, don't go back and get her. Make sure your brother's okay. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah.
And the only reason why I know, because my grandfather prepared for his death. He had a will. And even when my mom and my dad broke up, when he bought my grandma his plot, he bought my mom a plot too. Just in case she never got married again. He prepared for his own daughter death. So, you know, if my mom died tomorrow, we wouldn't have to pay for it. You know, that's already there. But do you know it's bad that we don't prepare for our own death, but our work prepares for us to die?
Mm-hmm. Replace you tomorrow. Or may not.
And when you get a new job, I don't think y'all realize, when you get a new job, you fill out all that paperwork, and then at the end of the paperwork, they say, if you die tomorrow, who do we send this money to?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
I knew this guy
once.
Who's the beneficiary? Even your bank. Everybody's preparing for your death except you.
Mm-hmm.
Because the law says that they have to prepare if there was a sudden accident, if you die. But did you know that the Bible already is preparing you for death too? I mean, we talk about it in church all the time. We don't know the day he's coming back, but he's going to come back. And when he comes back, everybody's gone. And the only one who goes to eternal life is the ones that are saved. And, you know, our pastor always asks us, are you ready? Are you preparing yourself? Are you saved? Are you preparing yourself? And do you believe in, you know, in Jesus Christ?
Go ahead, Tony.
I'm going to go back. I want to rewind just because I'm sitting here listening, and I know we talked about being strong for your spouse in that type of situation. And I'm sitting here, you know, and I deal with a lot of things with my wife just like any other marriage. And my wife lost both of her parents at a very young age. I think she was 18 when she lost the last parent. And she's been without parents for a long time, and it's just dawned on me as we're talking that there may be some issues, some underlying issues there.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? That creep into the marriage, some separation issues, some abandonment issues. I mean, because those are common in situations like that are coming at me, but I'm not recognizing them.
Grandma,
you see what I'm saying? It's coming, but it's coming in a different form.
you know, and I have to analyze. I be like, ooh, I have to be a little bit more. I mean, I'm just getting the aha moment here of, you know, of my responsibilities as her husband is now that maybe I have to be a lot more compassion with certain things that she throws in my direction and not mistake them for something else. Because I think that's, you see, I have both my parents, so I don't know what that's like. But when you deal with that, when your parents are gone, and then you marry somebody, and now she's my responsibility, you know? So now I got to really figure out, okay, am I handling my responsibilities to the fullest by diagnosing everything that may be wrong with her? Not saying there's anything wrong, but, you know, sometimes you argue, sometimes we don't understand them, they don't understand us. But now listening to this call, I'm thinking maybe that has something to do with some of the issues that I haven't picked up on yet.
Maybe she wasn't informed of some things that you were because you had parents, you know, in your early, you know, adulthood.
Yeah.
But then you got another problem too.
I do?
Yeah.
You're both
grandparents. He
okay.
never had an opportunity with her kid to pass her kid off to a grandparent.
Okay.
And now both of your grandparents. How does that affect her?
Well, that's still early, so that's, you know.
But you can, but if you're still having arguments now, if you're having fun with the kid, you're calling grandbaby, this is my grandbaby, call me papa, she may not know how that feels.
Yeah, but that's new. That's something that's new for everybody. That's
right.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about pre-existing from day one that I may not have picked up on.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Just, you know, and just like somebody said, the aunt died. I think Rodney said the aunt died, the uncle, great uncle, and you had no idea the significance of it.
Yeah.
So you went in a whole different direction. And there may be some underlying issues with that sort of thing that we just don't pick up on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or we may go out to, you know, for the night to hang out with the fellas and wonder why she's calling the phone every 15 minutes. Where you at? When you come home? What are you doing? Who are you with? And we think that they're just being nags, but there's some separation anxiety that's been there for a long time. That maybe we just didn't pick up on.
And maybe has never been dealt with.
And maybe he's never been dealt with.
And we're
taking it the wrong way. Like, man, she is insecure. But it may not be insecure because of the marriage, just because of the death of someone in the past that's rolled out on him. You know.
And Mr. Host, I want to rewind too, if I may. If y'all can think this far ahead, what if, you know, what if it did happen, your wife died? And, again, God forbid, but have y'all ever thought about would you date again? Would you get married again? And what kind of time frame? You know, if you have young children, would you wait until, you know, they're in college or graduated high school? I mean, have you thought about, you know, would you have a companion again? You know, as Tony mentioned earlier about he lost his companion, and that, you know, of course we all be grieving, you know, if we lose our companion. But would you, you know, not right away, of course, brothers, you know, please, you know, hear me out. But at some point, do you foresee yourself having another companion, a girlfriend? And the second part of that is that would you get married again? You know, knowing the possibility that you could, of course, lose us, tomorrow's not promised, all that. But have you thought about, would you just have a girlfriend? Would you just be single and possibly celibate for the rest of your life? I don't know how many girls can do that. But, or would you say, you know, eventually I would get another companion, eventually I would get married again, but, of course, take your time. So I don't know if y'all have thought that far down the road, and it may be too much for y'all to think about. Since, as the brother said, he can't even get his mind around losing, you know, his current companion. So I just want to throw that out there.
I don't think that's too much to think about.
I would hope that each and every one of us could find the strength to move on. That find the strength to move on, because you know if I wouldn't want my wife sitting around grieving over me. Because she's got so much more. If you here, have fun for the both of us. Even if it's with somebody else, have fun for the both of us. You know where I'm at. You see what I'm saying? You know where I'm at, and when you get there, we're going to hang out again. But until that point, have fun for the both of us.
I disagree.
Okay.
I told y'all before, you need to be single. I'll be jealous for
it's
going to
take time. Look, it's not going to be next month. It's going to take a while. It may take a long while, but at some point, you're going to have to move on.
Yeah.
That's the healing process. The healing process has got to, at some point, start to work in your life. You got to, you know.
Yeah, and why I say that is because me and the wife have talked about that. If I were to pass, would she get married again and all that stuff? And, she said that she would. So I'm such a great guy. She couldn't find nobody else like me, so it wouldn't even be worth her time. But on the real though, literally she said that, and I don't know what she would do, as Rodney said, we don't know what we'll do in that situation. But, hypothetically when we talked about it, she said she wouldn't, she wouldn't do the dating thing or get married again. That's just what she said. I don't know, but as I told y'all before, I would prefer that she would be single.
I think me and my wife we've had the politics talk of death. In other words, the wills and the this and the that, the things per se. But talking about what will we do if the other's gone, or would you date again? I don't necessarily need that in my head, especially if I'm dying a slow death, if something else, like the bus doesn't happen, something else happens. I don't need to be sitting there on that deathbed, the last couple of days or breaths that I had when I could be playing with grandkids and stuff. I got this stuff swirling in my head. She's going to leave me next week. She's going to find somebody else as soon as I'm gone, as soon as I'm buried, take my money. I choose not to have those conversations.
Hey, Rodney, what if it got to the point where, say that y'all were having the conversation and, she literally came out and said, I would actually, date your friend Craig.
That's not a conversation. See, at that point, it's not a conversation about death. That's a conversation about life. You got some other thoughts going on right now, not when I go.
Go ahead and go. When is you going to be leaving?
You got thoughts about Craig now.
Can you get an early flight? Man. I'm just messing with y'all. That's good.
Nah, I know it.
Yes, indeed. Now, I got it. It's 10:45, and I got to get my stress off now. We've talked about death. I think we got a lot out. And I think we hit a lot of souls about our wives and our kids and how we need to prepare for death. I think we end up having a great call tonight. And I thank you guys for taking
Mr.
time
Host.
Out. All
Mr.
right,
Host,
hurry up.
I got one more, and you can get it. I got one more quick monkey wrench to flip this thing, and then you can close it on out. Great job.
All right,
but
go ahead.
I want to ask this, fellas. What if there's death in a marriage when there's no death?
Ooh.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
that's what I want to talk about, when there's death in a marriage, but nobody's died. Nobody's dead.
That's the way I felt, man. I felt like, when I was going through that, my divorce, man, my second one, that's what I felt. I felt like her and her kids had all died because I couldn't see them. I couldn't see him. I was more grieving for the littlest son because me and him were real close. Me and him were super close. And I haven't seen him in 3 years. And I still think about him every so often. I think about him. I don't think about her so much as I do him. I feel like he died, I know what you're saying. Let's put it like that.
And we talked about it in the sense that
There's really no intimacy. You know, y'all just roommates per se. I mean, there's no, you know, your marriage has died. You know, even though y'all both still living and breathing.
Hmm.
That's deep.
Wow.
Real deep. That's a lack of, most of them, is, to me, it's just a lack of communication. You know, I think that's what it is. Most of the time in relationships, it's just a lack of communication. Like, you don't know how to come out and tell her, hey, baby, I'd like you to do certain things for me. And she on the vice versa might not tell you, hey, you're not doing certain things that I like right. Then you let things just manifest, and pretty soon you don't even know each other. You know?
Good words. Good words.
So, or as always, like, keep the line of communication wide open.
Yes, sir.
Don't ever feel like you can't tell her anything. If you do, you don't marry the wrong person. You feel you can't tell her everything that's on your mind. Because if
yeah.
she don't... She's not going to know if you don't tell her.
Yes, sir. Good words. Good words.
I don't know.
All right, Mr. Hope. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Goodness, anybody else? So stay there for 1 second. Do we tell our wives everything? And I don't want to slip too far off topic, but that was a good point that my brother brought up. And I think we've talked about this on another show before, but I think it's relevant to what my brother was just saying.
I mean, my point is, I'm talking about, like, I can't tell my girlfriend that, hey, this girl today hit on me or something like that, blah, blah, blah. You know, I can't tell her stuff like that because she'll get upset. I'm not saying stuff that's going to make her upset. I'm trying to tell you that stuff that makes your relationship with her stronger. Like, say you don't like her fried chicken.
I tell my wife
she can't make fried chicken. You say you can. You can say, you know, let's, baby, you know, stop it. You know, you can't do it. You know, I'll go in there and cook it or something like that. You know, you just can't cook the fried chicken. I don't like it. Like me and my girl, we had a similar problem. I can tell you this. She likes grilled hot dogs. I don't. So she said, I'm going to make you a hot dog. I run in the kitchen. You grilling it? She said, no, I'm boiling. I said, oh, thank God. Whew. But she know I don't like her grilled hot dogs. That's a small problem there, but I'm talking about bigger problems as well, you know, like, you know, sexually and stuff like that. If you got to tell them, you know, what you like and tell them what, then they'll let you know what you like.
But how do you talk of the small things, but you can't talk over the big things?
Right. If you're going to conquer the small stuff, it may seem small now, but, you know, like, I know I can't tell my girl that another woman hit on me or something like that. You know, I just can't. That's
maybe
that's
where you're at in your relationship, and you'll have to build up to that. But I wouldn't rule that out and isolate certain things that I'm talking about, certain things that I don't feel comfortable with being able to talk about.
Well, okay, so, and I like where you're going. I like where you're going. So, what's the answer? Is the answer, should we be able to tell them everything?
There is no.
Tomorrow you might be gone.
It depends on the person.
No, I'm talking about your wife. Your wife. That's the person. That's the one you married. That's
right.
The one. There is no substitute.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to tell her everything.
Be able to tell her everything.
Everything.
Even stuff she can't handle.
Not stuff that's going to make her upset that you know is going to, like I said, hitting on, like, a girl. Like, if I say, hey, baby, a girl hit on me today, oh, she must be on your mind. She'll flip the script. Because we've been through that.
Yeah, this
okay.
So
okay.
Wait a minute. I'm just telling
you
how my day went.
Take that one to the grave with it. There's some things you got to the grave with.
No, you just don't bring it up because, you know, the girl didn't mean nothing to me. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If I bring it up, she thinks that the girl meant something to me. It didn't mean anything. You know?
What Mike is saying is that you don't have to tell her.
You don't have to tell her.
That's not being, you know, that's not lying. You just don't tell her.
Well, if it's not, I think in that case, if it's not a big deal to you, like, you know, I went to Wendy's for lunch or something like that. Not
right,
come home,
exactly.
You know,
and if
that's not something I'm not even thinking about that. When I come home, you ask me how my day went or whatever. I'm not even thinking to tell you that I went to Wendy's or Taco Bell or something. I'm telling you, you know, hey, you know, I had this going on with this boss and then, you know, yada, yada, yada. But if I felt that, if it was something that I was, you know, I had thought about and I brought it up, I'd bring it up. Yeah, this person, you know, said something to me and she was showing cleavage all up in my face and, you know, just tapping up, then, you know, it is what it is.
I would never.
I think, I also think that's probably a part of where, you know, maybe where you're at in your relationship right now. I don't know how long, you know, you guys have been together or what have you, but, you know, me and my wife's pretty wide open with stuff like, we tell each other our dreams and stuff like that. You know, it's pretty wide.
Like I was saying, it depends on the person. You know?
So, oh, yeah, sure.
Like,
and where you at with that?
Take her to the Christmas party and that lady up in there.
Yeah, and where you at with that person? That's one thing I always kind of reiterate on this call every now and then is you know, don't go trying to apply everything from my house or from Tony's house or from Rodney's house into your relationship because
right.
You're going to find yourself by yourself.
Amen, brother.
It doesn't work mm-hmm. everywhere.
Yeah.
Amen, brother. Good words.
That, like Tony, you know, I always go back to Tony's example of, you know, because I said so. Well, see, that don't work in my eyes, and I can't use that one.
Me neither, Roger. Me neither.
Well, I'll be asking him if he has an extra bed.
That's right. It's all my fault.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm blaming Tony.
Like, I set you up, huh?
Exactly.
All my text messages say, I'm sorry, Tony, baby. Do it, baby. Let me come back.
Have your wife all mad at me.
Trust me, when my wife gets mad if you know my wife, then I'd much rather have her mad at you.
Yeah, sure. Hey, but I think there's something, I do believe that there's certain things that, just like Patrice said, that is better left unsaid.
Yep.
Even in the marriage, I mean, even things that happen, current events that happen.
Yep.
Not past stuff. We know past stuff that's hit or miss. But current events, there's some things that, you know, because sometimes we have to protect people from themselves. And you tell your wife something like, yeah, you know, this coworker keeps hitting on me. Your wife may want to go cause a scene at your job. You know what I'm saying? And you can't have that. You can't have that because that's how you make your money. So as long as you're handling it, you know what I'm saying, just like somebody hitting on my wife, if she handles it, I don't need to know. When she says, I can no longer handle it, it's a problem, then I need to know, then I need to intervene. But other than that, it is what it
right.
is.
Well, like I said, you got to kind of know, you know, if you have that type of wife that you know she don't mind, I like to say being nappy-headed. And,
yeah.
Coming up to the job and doing stuff. I know my wife. My wife isn't necessarily, she's not like that. No, you know, she'll do her thing here at the house, but she's not the type of person that would go out. But and the reason why I bring up the scenario that I brought up because I was just telling her that I got to go out to Austin for some training, and another lady in the office, a blonde who always shows her cleavage, big breasts, and she's always kind of like, and that's how I believe anyway. That's how she gets her promotions, and she kind of moved up the chain, et cetera, et cetera. And my wife has seen her before, and you know, hey, as a person, she all right, but you know, but then as a, you know, I'm business when I'm at work, and I don't like to see you getting ahead of me just because. So anyway, she's going out to, she has to go out to this. Convention as well with me, so we're going out together, and we're out there for a whole week. So, you know, but I told her, yeah, you know, she'd be flaunting her goods up in the office, and you know, doing this and kissing up the management and all this other stuff. And you know, she knows that now I'm going out there for a week with her. Of course, now my wife's like, you know, she's not tripping, you know, like that because she knows me, and that's the difference, I think.
Yeah.
If your wife is comfortable with you, now if you've done stuff in the past, then yeah, she got every right to just discount stuff that you're saying, and you know, if you say some stuff about a woman, you know, is flashing her cleavage at you or whatever, and she knows you've cheated on her before, and she forgave you, then yeah, she's gonna be a little skeptical on what that means, and you going out for a whole week and staying in a hotel with, you know what I mean? But, you know, you got to, your relationship, it has to be a two-way street. She has to know you have to know her, and y'all have to be comfortable with that.
Yeah, Rodney, it sounds like to me that you just need to get you some cleavage. So get you some, you know.
And Rodney,
I got upstairs. that's as far as I'm going.
You just said something. You just said something key, man. That I have a little issue with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna tell you, but it's self-inflicted. But it's a little issue, and yours is self-inflicted too. And let me tell you what I mean. By giving your wife, because I gave my wife so much confidence that nothing will ever happen outside my marriage. She's like, "Oh, I don't worry about you.
Mm.
Oh, I'm not worried about you. I know what you ain't gonna do. Nothing. I already know.
Mm-hmm.
I already know you love me. I already know. Yeah, I already know. I ain't worried about no other." She is so confident, it's not funny. But the issue that I have with that is, should they have that much confidence? Shouldn't they be on their toes just a little bit, like we got to stay on our toes?
Well,
I mean, am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right, Tony, and I think even though my wife has that type of confidence, I think she still has some reserve enough of saying, but there's a possibility.
Okay, good.
But there's all, I think so. She would never say that. You know, yeah, I trust you completely. Just like I would. I'd just say, hey, yeah, I trust you completely, which I do. But also know that you're also in this flesh like the rest of us, and no good thing dwells in it. So, you know, it's possible. Everything is possible.
She loves
Vin Diesel. So if Vin Diesel, maybe she never meets him because he's a star. But there's plenty of people who look like stars, et cetera,
yeah,
that you might bump into in the mall or whatever. So, you know, hey, you know, I don't know. I think it's just, that's kind of stuff that we talk about. Like, she's up there watching Hawthorne. I think it's off now, but she was watching Hawthorne when I came downstairs, and she says that she knows I like Jada Pinkett. You know, Jada, that's my girl. And she's like, you know, she liked Derek Jeter and Vin Diesel. That's, you know, that's her guys or whatever. And she was like,
mm-hmm,
"You ain't gonna stay up here and watch Jada." She almost like wanted me to stay up there. Like, "You ain't gonna watch
it." It's on the CPR. That's all you had to say. Don't worry.
I'm
on CPR.
On this call. Yeah, right. I'm gonna concentrate on this call. I'm going down there and hang out with the fellas on the call. It's not that big a deal. You know what I mean? I'm not going gaga over the girl because I do have my wife and I do appreciate her and not going to disrespect her. However, you know, I think that type of a relationship is healthy. That you can, you're not gonna pretend that there ain't no other there's no other men out there as fine as you. You're being a fool to think that your wife don't see, you know what I mean? And she would be a fool to think that there's no other woman out there, and I think I've said this on the call before, that's has a better body than her, because it's not about necessarily the body. It's not necessarily about the brain in and of itself. It's about the holistic aspect of that woman being for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you have to measure it. You can't just measure in the body. You have to measure in the brain. You have to measure in the personality and the comedic side of that woman. You have to measure in all these factors. And when you put them all together, is she for you? And that's kind of the decision that you have to make before you get married. But, you know, so me and my wife, we're not disillusional kind of looking at other people and just saying, hey, now that person is attractive. I think that person's attractive. And, you know, it works. Now, can you do that in every relationship? Just going back to my point, can you do that in every relationship? Should you do that in every relationship? No, you need to know that person.
I can't. I was working at a convention yesterday. You know, I'm an electrician. And I saw this woman yesterday. She's from Richmond. Her name is Holly. I will never forget her. That's how fine she was. Her name is Holly Miller. Right? And she was married. Don't get me wrong. I didn't try to hit on her or nothing, but she was married, and I told her straight up, I said, Mr. Miller is a lucky man. You know what I'm saying? But I couldn't go tell my girl that I did something like that. She would never understand that I just found her very, very attractive. You
okay,
know,
that...
You can have Jada Pinkett and all of them. I'll take Holly.
Well, okay, that's... But that I agree with. You can't do that. But anything that I feel that I can't do, I do my best not to do.
Exactly. I feel you on that one.
Yeah.
I don't like feeling confined. I don't like feeling imprisoned that I can't, you know, speak freely or whatever. Does it cause some conflict? Sometimes it do. You know, sometimes, you know, she's like, well, you know, why you do something like that? You know, why is it? Yeah, it do cause some kind of tension, whatever, but I think they also gain a level of respect for you when you tell it.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, Jada do be coming back to hometown Baltimore sometimes, so.
Now, let me tell
I'm
you
playing
this.
To Richmond.
Now, if in fact, you know, something like that was to take place, you know, and there was a signing event or, you know, something like that, she was at the mall, at Rundle Mills or something like that, now that would be a tripping moment.
No, sir, I don't know.
I couldn't go to that. She wouldn't let me go to that. She let me watch the TV all day long, watch The Matrix or any other movie that she might play in. But I better not think that I'm going to a signing of her book signing or whatever she's got going on. I better not do that.
I already told my wife, I'm taking one for the team. If Janet Jackson comes through, taking one for the team.
Oh, man.
I got to. I ain't got no choice in the matter.
There are limits.
Yeah.
Word.
I'm sorry. And she said, well, if Denzel come, I said, well, tell Denzel I said hello. Be best if we need that money.
Oh, man. Go ahead, household.
But look,
and you know, my comfort level, let me just say the last point, but my comfort level is okay, just like hers is probably okay, as long as you ain't going to be around that person. That's why we're comfortable with, yeah, hey, yeah, there's Vito on TV and that. Vin Diesel, she see on the big screen, and it's like, you know, oh, yeah, you know, he's kind of fine. She'll smile or whatever. My sister, you know, she'll get her tripping. You know, she'll get her going because that's my sister's man, too. And so they, you know, they'll go back and forth. She'll get her going on it. However, you know, like I said, the limit is, and where that reserve that I talked about will kick in, is if you ever had an opportunity to meet that person.
Right.
Then that changes everything. The only reason why we can hang and we can joke and laugh about this stuff now is because we know we ain't going to ever meet them.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But if it was somebody in the office, it wouldn't be no joking matter.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my wife did that once. She had a picture of LL Cool J on her screen table. I'm somewhere on her computer. So I went and got one of those. Somebody had sent me one of these big booty girls. And wasn't no celebrity, just a straight up big booty, fine, 20. I put that up on mine. She was like, why you got her? I said, well, why you got him up there? It is what it is, right? I mean, I thought it was legal. I thought, you know, that's how we roll.
Right? And you was, you was within your rights.
Within my rights, but see, mine was more realistic. I think mine came off of Facebook or something. So, you know.
That's funny.
Hey, so I didn't reach off the phone, but y'all have a safe night, and I'll talk to y'all next week for real.
All right,
yeah.
Mike.
Is that Mike?
Yeah, it's Mike.
Yeah, Mike, come back next week, man. I got a show for you.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
I'll be back.
Yes,
all right,
sir.
Later.
All right, it's a little bit after 11. I know people got to get ready to go to bed, go to work. We all got to. But I got to get my stress off.
Go ahead.
All right. And this is what it is. And I believe everybody on the phone has seen this situation or have been a part of this situation. But this is what I can't stand. Why can't we bury a person before everybody trying to grab everything that they own? Is your life so meaningless that you will fight your own family member for what that person did in their life? And let me give you a kind of example of what I'm talking about. My wife just passed away this week, 92 years old. Lived her life for Christ. Husband died 2 years ago. It ain't no question that when she went up there at the pearly gates, that she ain't even had to ask for the name. God was like, what's up, Betsy? Come on.
Come on in.
Come on in. But this type of lady we talking about here. Never had kids, but godparent to everybody. You know, one of those sweet ladies that just lovable, took care of her husband, loved her husband until the day he died. Even when he got sick, she wouldn't let nobody take care of herself. One of these type ladies. And all the kids, brothers, own brothers, sisters, she prepared. She had a will And they got mad because in her will, in her wishes, she remembered everything that happened in her life and who took care of her when she got older, who came and saw her. That's all she left stuff to. And not a brother and not a sister or anything else. And she says, I want to, when I die, I want to be buried 2 days after I left this world. These are her wishes. Why is it that family members take it upon themselves to disrespect a person's wishes when they have it documented and they have told you while they were living, this is what I want?
Immaturity.